Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
I'm here today with House File 2748. And by way of introduction, members, I will just point out you've seen part of this previously on line 2.26 all the way to the end. That is the provision for the medical malpractice insurance for the volunteer dentists and physicians.
And this is on the House File 2748?
Yes. Okay. It's line 2.26 through the end. Okay. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that particular provision because we were here once before with that. The House File came over and included what you see in Section 1. And that is, in fact, a Senator Kubley provision. So I have invited Senator Kubley to join us today. And, Madam Chair, I would defer my comments to Senator Kubley.
Senator Kubley, welcome.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. You know, the while the section comes, the Section 1 comes from Senate File 3736, which has to do with the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative. And Mr. Chuck Ness from the cooperative is here, and he can tell you a little bit about it. I understand Senator Betzold has a concern with the part dealing with the Attorney General, and we can delete that in a minute. But maybe we'll let Mr. Ness tell you about the bill for a minute, if that's all right, Madam Chair.
Mr. Ness, just a few brief comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, I'm the president of the Minnesota Rural Health Cooperative based in Granite Falls, Minnesota. We just recently moved to Cottonwood, Minnesota. We're a consortium of 23 critical access hospitals and 34 clinics in mainly western, southwestern Minnesota. One of the things we do is negotiate health plan contracts on behalf of our members. And one of the things we're looking for with this legislation is to get additional state oversight on our contracts. We haven't had any problems with our health plans, but we just feel that this would be it was in the original 62R legislation, but we just wanted to have a little more active state oversight. 62R, I believe, was passed in, like, 1994. So we've been working with the health plans for since 97. Successfully.
Okay. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair, I was looking at the bill prior to the hearing, and if you look on the House File on page 2, starting on line 15, it has a sentence that says the commissioner shall ask the attorney general to comment on the application and any information obtained by the commissioner under the section is not admissible in any proceeding brought by the attorney general based upon antitrust law. It also provides another sentence of dealing with data practices. Whether evidence is or is not admissible is sort of a question the Judiciary Committee needs to know about because, you know, the legislature should be very cautious about deciding what is or is not admissible in court. And this bill was not seen in the Judiciary Committee. And if it were to be, if it were to proceed, I would feel an obligation to make an objection to the reference to the floor and have it go to would have to go to the Rules Committee. And at this stage of the game, that would be have the effect of killing the bill. So, I don't know about the data classification. I think what we may have to take a look at that before it gets to the floor. But I will move to delete the section the sentence. Start on line 2.15 that says the commissioner may ask all the way through 2.17. Again, those are that's strictly a judiciary issue, and this bill was not heard by that committee.
Senator Lynch or Senator Kubley?
Madam Chair, we would take that as a friendly amendment.
Okay, Senator Betzold moves to delete on line 2.15 after the period through the end of line 2.17. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, I have the A2 amendment.
Has that been passed out? No. Okay.
Looks like his mother.
Is it?
And Madam Chair,
Senator Murphy.
Can I add an oral amendment to the A2 amendment?
Not everyone has the A2 amendment yet. Just wait a minute.
Madam Chairs and Madam Chair and members, this is a steadfast amendment. I think we've heard that several times here. I know that Senator Lynch probably has a few folks that want to speak in favor of it. The oral amendment that I would offer up is to delete sections 2 and 3 of the bill, starting on line 2.26. Those two sections have already been enacted into law.
Okay, that's correct. The bill, the original bill, the amendment is to delete section 2. Why don't we take this as two separate motions, because I don't think deleting section 2 and section 3, that's already in another bill. Okay. Mm-hmm. Members of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Senator Murphy, my understanding is that this bill is traveling as a separate bill in both the House and the Senate. And
Senator Berglund, you're talking about the A2 amendment?
Yes.
Could we just dispense with this other thing first? So Senator Murphy is going to make two separate motions just to be cleaner. One is to delete Section 2 and 3 of the bill. I don't believe there's any disagreement with that. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just comment. Senator Murphy is correct. That provision has been heard here, and, in fact, it's my understanding that the governor signed that yesterday.
Yeah. We do know that the governor has signed it into law. I'm not sure it was heard here, but okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay. Then Senator Murphy on the A2 amendment. Senator Berglund.
Well, as I was saying, my understanding is that it's traveling separately. My understanding is that there's some question about whether, I mean, I know the department doesn't support it, and so there's some question about whether it will survive, and, you know, maybe we should let it do that on its own rather than putting it with something else that then might be brought down with it. I thought there were some discussions that were being initiated between the department and the authors of that bill to try to see if they could overcome the objections the department has.
Yeah, until we get to that, I can have them do it. Okay. Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Berglund. I guess the extent of the conversations that the department has had, I feel as if those concerns have been incorporated into the amendment that appears before you. One of the concerns the department had is related to information you see beginning on line 2.27, and their concern was with regard to what we're talking about, eligible individuals under the age of 65 and over the age of 65, and that has been addressed in there. One of the other concerns brought forward by the department along the way was is reflected on line 3.3, which has to do with the cost associated with this. And as is noted in the bill on line 3.3, Olmsted County has agreed to be responsible for those associated costs.
Madam Chair.
Senator Berglund.
It was deleted.
Madam Chair and Senator Lynch. I thought they also wanted some future sunset date on this provision.
Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, I have not had any discussions with the department along those lines. I don't know if that to be true or not true.
Well,
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, what I had been told was that they wanted a sunset date that was, I believe, 2011, or when the contract would be renewed. So,
Senator Berglund, did you want to offer that as an amendment to Senator Murphy's amendment, or?
No, I don't want to do that at this time. I just want to indicate that I don't think all of the concerns have been taken care of in this amendment.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair and Senator Berglund, I think that we both know that if we adopted all the concerns that the department would have, we wouldn't have a bill. And I know that Senator Lynch has worked hard to try to get this bill moving along on its own, as you referred to earlier. Unfortunately, I don't think that we're going to be hearing this bill on the Senate floor on its own. And that's why we're here trying to offer an amendment onto this bill.
So the standalone bill, did this committee pass the standalone bill?
Yes.
Madam Chair, yes, it did pass. It's sitting on general orders. And I would just, I appreciate Senator Murphy offering the amendment today. And I'll just, there are a host of districts that have county-based purchasing in them, many in districts that you all represent. The steadfast provision specifically falls under the jurisdiction of Senator Murphy's district, Senator Sparks, Senator Erickson Rope, Senator Senjum, and myself.
Is there any more discussion on the A2 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. No. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Then on the House file, then 2748. Is there any more discussion on the House file? Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I'd move the bill as amended.
Senator Murphy moves House File 2748 as amended to be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Then the next bill on the agenda is House File 3969.
Somebody wrote that. Senator Larson.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what we ought to do is start with Senator Anderson has an amendment that she would like to move. And so why don't we start with that, and she can perhaps explain her amendment.
We have the A1 amendment in front of us.
Madam Chair, I have worked with Senator Larson over the last 12 hours to find a way to repass the minimum wage bill, and that's what you see in front of you. As you all know, the governor vetoed the minimum wage bill last night, the bill that was passed by the House and Senate out of conference committee about a week ago or a few days ago. And Senator Larson has graciously agreed to allow his House file 3969 to be amended as this bill, his bill's already passed into law, I believe, last year. And so we'd like to delete the language of that and put a new minimum wage bill on this bill. And Madam Chair, just to explain the amendment very briefly, it is the same as what we passed out of the conference committee with one big change that we are making, and this is an effort once again to make an additional compromise on the bill in the hopes that perhaps the governor would consider signing this bill, and that is to reduce the increase for large businesses. Right now, the bill that the Senate passed and the House passed and we passed out of the conference committee calls for large business minimum wage to increase this year to $6.75 an hour, and next year to $7.75 an hour. I know that was one of the governor's concerns, was that that number was too high. The small business number is also increased in our bill from $6.75 an hour this year and $5.75 this year and $6.75 next year, so it would be a dollar less. But what we're proposing in the amendment today is a big concession on this dollar amount. And to reduce the large employer increase by 25 cents. A year from now, in 2009, the federal minimum wage will take effect at $7.25 an hour in Minnesota for large employers only. And what this amendment would do was say that Minnesota would go 25 cents above that rather than 50 cents above that as in the bill that we passed last week on the Senate floor. So we're basically proposing splitting the difference on large employers, and so that we would be above the federal minimum wage, but by a lot less amount. So, Madam Chair, I'm reluctant to do this, but to me, obviously, a lesser increase is far better for the people of Minnesota than no increase at all in terms of those workers across our state who need a raise. So I would ask members to support this in the spirit of compromise and hope we can pass this and send it to the governor and see if we can get this increase signed into law.
Madam Chair?
Senator Jen Olson.
Madam Chair, is the I don't know that I see the amendment. I got the
A1 amendment.
One?
To 39.
I didn't see it. Where's the tip credit in there?
It's not.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson.
Senator Anderson.
I am not touching the tip. I'm not creating a tip credit or a tip penalty in this legislation. We haven't had one in Minnesota for years and years and years, and I don't believe that it's fair to say that we're going to leave some people behind when we raise the minimum wage and to leave tipped employees behind. I know that's something the governor cares a lot about, and I guess I'll reiterate, when we went to conference committee, we did hear testimony from Commissioner Swigum about what the governor's position on the minimum wage bill was. What we heard from Commissioner Swigum was that the governor wanted to sign an increase. We heard the governor opposed the inflator that we put in, the automatic increases with inflation in the bill. The governor wanted a tip credit or tip penalty so that tipped employees would get less of an increase. The governor didn't support our increased the numbers that we were increasing to, and the governor didn't support us repealing the training wage for people under age 20. So what we did was to compromise on in many, many ways, so that we agreed to take out the inflator or the automatic inflationary increase. And I would suggest that the governor needs to agree to not insist on the tip penalty. I think those are two pretty comparable provisions that, and if we give on one, I would ask him to give on the other. It's not something that we've ever supported in the legislature for many, many years. I have documentation from Deed that talks about tipped employees in Minnesota. Yes, there's a few waiters and waitresses around the state that are getting a lot of money in tips, but the vast majority of them are just barely getting by, just like everyone else who works at low-wage jobs, especially given today's price increases. I mean, we're all feeling it every time we go to the gas pump or go to the grocery store, how difficult it is. We know that in Minnesota, tipped employees, including their tips, their median wages are well under $8 an hour. Now, if any of us have lived on that lately, I'd like to hear how you do it, because you can't. You can't do it unless you have two jobs or you're living in poverty and relying on government assistance. The numbers just don't add up. And so this is about self-sufficiency. This is about helping Minnesotans help themselves and be able to work hard and support their families with their income. So this does not include a tip penalty. This includes an increase. It maintains a small business rate, which is going to be a dollar lower this year. And then with our lowered increase that I'm proposing, it would be 75 cents lower next year in the end. We're maintaining a training wage, which the Senate had repealed in our bill last year. And we've taken out the inflator. So I think it's we've compromised in at least half. We've gone at least halfway, I believe, in compromising. And this represents another compromise. And, you know, I would hope that maybe this will get the job done.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, as long as we've been working on minimum wage bills, I should know the answer to this, but I don't. So could you help me out? Who is required to pay the federal minimum wage, and who pays the state minimum wage, and how is that decided?
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, that's a hard one for me to answer too.
Sorry.
So I'll do my
best. So it isn't
best.
Just me that doesn't know that.
No,
answer?
No. It's complicated, and okay. So I apologize because I passed this bill a year ago, and I need to review all that stuff before I bring this on the floor, I guess. And I think someone here, Chris Jacobs, could help me answer that if I don't do it right. But basically, the federal minimum applies to anyone, any business that is involved in interstate commerce. That's my understanding, and whatever that means. So how is that defined? Maybe Ms. Jacobs could
Ms.
help
Jacobs.
Give a more precise definition.
Madam Chair, I'm going to need a minute to look at this. As I understand it, for the federal minimum wage, businesses...
Why don't you say your name first?
I'm sorry. I'm Chris Jacobs, Director of Jobs Now Coalition, advocates for raising the minimum wage. Businesses, the federal minimum wage applies to businesses that have $500,000 in gross receipts annually and who engage in interstate commerce. That's who it applies to.
Only those that are 500,000 or greater?
No, not only those. I'm just looking, this,
okay.
looking at this now.
Madam Chair.
Senator Foley.
Madam Chair, and, I'm sorry I didn't get your name, but I just wanted to know, isn't there a number of workers that you have to fit into that?
Minimum number of workers that you hire?
21 or over?
Madam Chair,
Jacobs.
I think it's 50.
Oh, 50. So only 50 employers or more? I mean, if you have a business with 50 employees or more, then the federal law would take effect. So probably half the businesses in Minnesota would be under that threshold, but that's a guess. And so I apologize. I don't have a clear answer, and I can get you a printout by the floor that by the
maybe
time we go to
by the time we have that on the floor, Madam Chair and Senator Anderson, you can maybe address that, because if I don't understand it, it's likely that lots of other people don't either. Oh,
20 employees. And interstate commerce. Okay, we're told 20 employees or less. Sorry. Are excluded from the federal minimum wage. And so we have a little bit of an overlap because Minnesota has a definition of small employers, which is now $625,000 in, I think, gross receipts
yes.
a year, but it's not based on the size. It's based on the revenue. So there'd be sort of so a lot of small businesses in Minnesota would be under the state small business rate. They would not get the federal increase. They wouldn't be required to pay the federal increase unless they met those federal standards.
Okay. And, Senator Anderson, this version does not include the inflator?
No, no. Madam Chair, just to reiterate, this is the same bill that we passed off the Senate floor the other day with only one change, and that change is to, in the Senate bill, we raised the large employer minimum wage to $7.75 an hour. Now we're going to raise it to $7.50 an hour. So that at the end of the two-year period. So that'll be the highest rate for large businesses by 2009. And for small businesses, it'll still be $6.75 an hour.
Senator Betzel.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I probably missed it on the first bill, but the effective date is a little unusual. It's effective July 24, 08.
That's a good one.
And Mr.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Senator Betzel, that's a very good question, but there's also a very good reason for it. This came out of the conference committee report from the House. The House had those dates because those are the dates of the federal minimum wage increase will go into effect. And so it made sense to have it happen on the same day in Minnesota. So I don't know why they picked that date.
Why did they pick that date?
But
that's
we're
funny.
Just going to go along with it just for simplicity's sake.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And not knowing that this was coming up, we have no amendments prepared. But you're getting close, Senator Anderson, but I too still have problems with the tip credit. And I know that they're saying that the average wage is $8 or under for tipped staff, but that's because that's all that's reported. And I really think that that staff, I mean, the tip staff is earning well above the minimum wage almost in every instance. There may be some small town rural cafes where they certainly struggle to make $8 or $10 an hour. But you know, it's a time right now where I know the restaurant businesses are hurting. Their food costs have gone up tremendously and people are not going out to eat as much. And so I really hesitate at this time to put that extra burden on the restaurants. And I've been aware that there's a couple of businesses like Baker Square, they're closing up. I've heard that another major chain is not going to open any more businesses in Minnesota. I'm concerned about those issues and that whole restaurant establishment and how they'll deal with another increase. And even the patrons who are already hesitating to go out to eat because of the costs, a lot of this has to be passed on to them, of course. And so there will be even fewer people potentially going out because, of course, when the food cost goes up, then your percent that you feel you should be tipping goes up too. And so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of an escalating issue. And I'm just concerned. What we see reported and what is actually happening out there in a cash tipping business is often two different things.
I guess I just wanted to comment as the chair that I have a lot of restaurants in my district, and they go out of business, and yet it seems overnight someone else has bought the restaurant and opened up. And I did have, I know, Four Paws. He just decided to sell, but someone else bought the restaurant. So I feel like people still feel like there's money to be made in the restaurant business, although it's a very, very tough business. And also the thing about waitresses is and waiters is they don't work full-time hours. They work very intense hours over a lunch period or a dinner period, but they hardly ever get in 40 hours. So I think we have to take account for that they need to have higher wages so that being a waiter or waitress can be considered a full-time job. They work very intensely for those 2 hours. You know, I mean, if they had to work 8 hours at that kind of pace, they probably would collapse or something or have a heart attack. But they run around and they work very hard, and so I think we do have to consider that when we consider their wages, even including their tips. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I was just thinking about how for most people, when they go to a restaurant, the face of that restaurant is the servers. And if you have a tip credit, you're penalizing the people who are really the promoters of your business. And they are the, you know, they are the people that are being given a tip for their good service. And I would think that that's what an employer wants, is to have their servers give good service and make people want to come back to that restaurant. But penalizing them for doing that good service and getting those tips is just the wrong way to go.
And frankly,
I don't think a tip credit would pass the Minnesota legislature. Either body.
And frankly, if they want good service, then the wait staff also tips the cook, and they also tip the
bus boy.
Yeah,
back of the house.
You know, back of the house, too, because that's really important how well cooked the food is, obviously.
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, I'm going to jump into this because two of my daughters worked their way through college.
That's what I was going to say.
The abuse that they took from the drunks that come 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
This is pittance what we're giving those people.
Close it too.
That's a terrible, it's a hard job. You get somebody that's drunk and first he's going to order so much of this, and when they bring it over, well, I don't want that. I mean, it's a tough business. I don't care what anybody says. I don't think we pay them enough.
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, I really appreciate your saying that. I was just going to comment that I worked my way through college and after college and law school as well, being a waitress. And so I know exactly what you're talking about. Been there, done that. Experienced that and worse, and it's a hard job. And I'll tell you that you spend a lot of hours filling up ketchup bottles and filling up napkin containers and salt shakers and cleaning. I cleaned the bathroom in a pizza place on University Avenue at 3 a.m. after the drunks left, and it was not a pretty sight. And that was all part of my job as a waitress. And you know, I have a lot of respect for people who work that hard and do that to support their families. It isn't an easy job, and they deserve, you know, this is not, the thing is that even if we raised this wage to where we wanted to in the bill we passed already, we'd be talking about someone who worked full-time making $16,000 a year. That's at the upper end of this bill as it came out of the Senate. That is below the federal poverty line, I believe, for a family. And you just can't work it on one job full time. It just doesn't add up. And so people aren't getting rich off of this. And remember, these are the people that wait on us every day, that take care of us and give us our coffee. And we can't forget about them and leave them behind when we are living in tough times.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
I had the pleasure and the opportunity to go down in my district. Senator Marty brought an anti-poverty committee out there. And when he did that, I thought, well, anti-poverty, that's just in metro area. Why are you doing that out in rural Minnesota? I had a rude awakening when we got out there because they don't get enough of a salary to stay in an apartment, and I know they're half what I pay in this apartment, but they still don't get enough. So this isn't enough, but if that's what we can start working up through it. You know, you can just add a little bit more to you. There, they have a way of taking care of that. Nobody's going to tell me that they can't do that.
Well, and so. Madam Chair, you know, if the minimum wage had kept up with inflation, it would be almost $10 an hour now since it was first passed. That was the idea, is to set a floor where a working person would go to work, work full time, and not live in poverty. You know, and we have lost sight of that. And that's why we keep having to come back every few years like a broken record and say, raise it again, which is why we wanted to put inflation in here like some states have done and say, let's let it go up with the cost of living. So I think that's a pretty major concession to take that out of the bill. I would like to see that in the bill. Again, I've made some compromises, and I don't know. I hope that this can get the job done.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Stump.
Do you have any information to show, like, how many jobs or what percent of the jobs actually pay more than the minimum wage? And we talk about restaurants and waiters and waitresses. But I think the real area would be in the retail businesses on Main Street where, mm-hmm. I mean, that would probably be the, I'm guessing, but in smaller communities, that would probably be the lowest paying jobs. But I'm guessing that most of the businesses across the state, maybe the majority of them pay more than this already.
Senator Anderson, Ms. Jacobs.
Senator, what we were talking about,
how many people make below this?
In Greater Minnesota, I don't have the figures for the metro area, but in Greater Minnesota, one out of four jobs pays less than $7.75 an hour.
So 25, Madam
Senator
Chair,
Stump.
25%. Now this is taking all the jobs. So about
these are job openings. Sorry.
Hmm. Okay, so you could probably back
entry
into
level.
It, but about 25% is really what we're trying to help.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Someone else had their hand up. I thought maybe
thank you.
We haven't adopted the amendment yet.
Have we passed the A1 amendment?
We have not adopted the A1 amendment.
Yes.
Okay, Senator. Senator Anderson moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Okay, are there any other questions then? I don't know if Senator Murphy wanted to come back in and vote. Is Senator Murphy out in the hallway?
And Madam Chair, you know, I apologize. This is kind of not a lot of notice to get this done, but obviously we only have 2 work days left in the session. We got the veto. The message was delivered to the governor on Monday, and we got the veto yesterday about 4 or 5 o'clock. And so we don't have much time, and I think everyone in this body is really quite familiar with this issue. We spent a lot of many, many hours on it, and it's been through lots and lots of committees. So I think we should go ahead and pass it. I would move the bill.
You can still move it.
That's right.
Right. Senator Anderson moves House File 3969 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Berglund, would you just chair? Senator Berglund, would you just chair? And if members are okay, I'll just stay right here.
No.
Just lazy.
No.
All right, I'll go sit down.
No. Everybody else has to.
All right.
That doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Stay where you're at.
Oh,
I thought that Betts will tell you what to do.
Betts,
we either have rules or we don't have rules.
Tell him what to do.
We don't follow.
The
don't like rules.
Oh,
yes. I know.
Come on.
No rules on Fridays.
Casual Friday.
Casual Friday.
Betzel's got to get his big nose in there.
Senator Pappas, Senate File 588.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, we found let me start back. First of all, the House and the Senate have both passed legislation to require a more comprehensive, responsible approach to sex ed. Those were in the omnibus bills. The chair of the House omnibus policy bill rejected including it in the omnibus bills. So then the House author and I decided that we would try a separate, standalone bill. She has her bill on the House floor. I passed what I thought was my companion bill out of Senator Wieger's committee and out of the Rules Committee yesterday. We found out late yesterday that we did not have each other's companions. I had the bill we introduced this year, and she had the bill we introduced last year. So in order to match them up, we had to take up her companion bill, which is Senate File 588, and I'd like to offer the A2 amendment, which would put the bill into the kind of the compromise version of just working off the existing statute.
That's really good.
So I'll move the A2 amendment.
Any discussion of the A2 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, then is the A2 amendment what passed out of Rules Committee yesterday then?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, you said this is a compromise version?
This was, since the governor had indicated some discomfort with the repealing the existing statute, I took the existing statute and just offered some changes to the statute. And, you know, I got input from Senator Roebling and Senator Olson, but I can't say that everyone has signed off on this version. Mr. Pritchard has not. But I felt like it still was worthwhile to go forward with a version that perhaps the governor could be persuaded to support.
And Senator Fischbach?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I'm sorry, I had to step over and grab a copy of the amendment, but you said that it was attached in rules, too?
It was sent out by the Rules Committee, but it was sent out on the wrong Senate file. It was not sent out on the companion to the House author's bill, which is on the House floor. So this is kind of a technical thing that we need to do here today, is just to get it on the right bill, right companion bill.
Any further discussion of the A2 amendment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Stumpf.
Just see if I understand what you're doing. So really the bill then becomes the A2 amendment?
Yes.
And the Senate File 588 is not in play anymore, right?
The original language?
Right.
Of Senate File 588, no.
Not on this bill.
Thank you.
Nor is 3349. Would just be this this delete all amendment to 588.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Pappas, there's one thing that kind of happens here when we, on line 1.7, when you drop in pregnancies, it says a program to prevent pregnancies and reduce the risk of sexually transmitted infections. It used to say to prevent and reduce the risk of sexually transmitted infections.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if we should get rid of the word reduce, or how we could
prevent
handle that.
The risk.
So we are talking about really the prevention.
And prevent sexually transmitted infections and diseases.
What line?
Does that work grammatically, Senator Olson?
What line?
1.7.
To prevent pregnancies and sexually transmitted infections and diseases.
Well, yeah. Reduce the risk of.
Well, she wants reduce.
Sure.
Instead of saying reduce the risk of, just say prevent.
Prevent pregnancies. Excuse me, Madam Chair. Prevent pregnancies and sexually transmitted infections and diseases.
That's
makes
better.
Sense.
Yeah. Okay, that's fine.
The risk of in there.
So Senator Roebling is moving an amendment to the A2 amendment. Can we just repeat it for the members?
Here, so is this.
Yeah. Madam Chair, it would say it would delete and reduce the risk of
line
on 1.7 and 1.8. Uh-huh. After pregnancies, it would delete and reduce the risk of. So it would say a program to prevent pregnancies and sexually transmitted.
Leave the and in.
The and.
You start with reduce, leave the and in.
Wait, what?
Leave the and in.
Say a program to prevent pregnancies and sexually transmitted infections.
And you start deleting with the word reduce.
Okay, I'm sorry. You're right.
Any discussion of that amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment to the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair?
Senator Higgins.
1.17, what is an SC? S, among districts and SCs. What would that be?
1.17?
School council, school...
Service cooperatives.
We spelled out. What does service cooperatives have to do with this?
They can provide the training, the education on preventing sexually transmitted diseases. If the school district can't do it themselves, the service cooperative could offer that class.
Not supposed to.
Madam Chair? I think
Senator Olson?
I know that's current law, but I think that is poor usage, and I think instead of SCs, it should say educational service cooperatives. Just say the words. Is it education or educational?
We have it. What is it?
Which is it?
Service
cooperatives. Service cooperatives.
Council, do you know what is the appropriate term?
Or are they just service cooperatives?
Just service cooperatives.
Service cooperatives?
Mm-hmm.
Just, I think that should be, the words should be used instead of the initials.
So, Madam Chair, the amendment would be on page 1, line 17, strike SCs and insert service cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You've heard the amendment by Senator Olson. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? That amendment is adopted. Any further discussion of the A2 amendment?
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I'm not necessarily challenging this, but I wonder if you could tell me what the difference between being accurate and being medically accurate is. If it's accurate,
as opposed to technician,
accuracy is accuracy, isn't it? What,
Senator
what would
Pappas.
Be the difference?
I think it just makes it a more specific term rather than technically accurate. That what we're talking about is really medical information on anatomy that is age appropriate. I think it's kind of the term of art when you're describing. These types of programs, that you want them to be medically accurate.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would say the same even for technically. You know, I think accuracy is accuracy. So, but that's I said I'm not making a big point of it. But it's.
Any further discussion of the A2 amendment? Seeing none, those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Any further discussion of Senate File 588?
I'll move that Senate File 588 as amended be recommended to pass.
Any further discussion?
Yeah.
Those in favor of the motion that Senate File 588 as amended be recommended to pass, say aye.
Aye.
Aye.